Hi, Brian.
Hi, Katie.
And hello, listeners everywhere. By the time you hear this, Brian and I will probably be off with our own families celebrating Thanksgiving, but we also suspect you might need a little escape from the family drama, the big knockdown, drag-out fights and political conversations you might be having, not to mention the extra dry turkey Thanksgiving tends to bring. So this week, we're revisiting one of our favorite episodes of Podcast Past.
And this guest always serves a very moist turkey. Last year, Katie and I met with the inimitable Martha Stewart at the headquarters of her empire, Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia. The offices take up an entire city block, appropriately so, in the Chelsea neighborhood of Manhattan, right along the Hudson River.
And they definitely passed the white glove test. They were beautiful and, of course, very clean. Martha, no surprise here, is not particularly messy. We would never get along. We would be Oscar and Felix. And we walked around the joint afterwards, and I have to tell you, the place is stocked.
It's pretty amazing. Color-coded design books, test kitchens, plural, a million different props for photo shoots.
As Martha might say, Brian, it's a good thing. Anyway, for yes. More than 35 years, Martha Stewart has dominated all things domestic. She's lent her good taste and name to everything from TV shows, cookbooks, to bath towels, meal kits, magazines, and so much more. She's like a cottage industry, and I think she's made elegance accessible to the average person.
And in our conversation, we wanted to get a better sense of the woman behind the empire, how she stays so productive, what motivates her, and the ups and downs in her life and career.
When we interviewed her, she was just putting out a slow cooker cookbook. It was her 89th cookbook, if you could believe that. And by the way, I'm still planning to purchase a slow cooker. I just looked at her cookbook the other day, Brian. It's sitting on my kitchen counter, and I was like, you know what? I need to try some of these.
You've got to do it. Slow cookers are awesome. You prep everything in the morning, and by dinner time, you've got a wonderful meal.
I'm going to make it happen. She also was just starting her new TV show with Snoop Dogg called Potluck Dinner Party.
Get the double entendre there, folks.
Potluck.
Ooh, yeah, ooh. Yeah. Oh.
I guess the show really has brought in the green because it's just its second season. Hold on,
getting
Brian.
Getting pathetic.
Anyway.
We've really gone off the rails here. Anyway, let's get to our conversation with Martha Stewart, and you might want to have a plate of leftovers at the ready because this podcast is going to make you very hungry, and not just because of Snoop Dogg. Before we go all the way back, I think a lot of people remember that moment in 1999 when Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia went public.
Yep.
And you served homemade brioche at the New York Stock Exchange.
We did, and croissant.
Tell us a little bit about the journey of the company since then, to the point that you're sort of selling it now. You're no longer listed.
Well, it was probably one of the most exciting days in my life, except for the day that my daughter Alexis was born. And maybe the day I got married, and then 2 days that my grandchildren were born. And maybe my cats and my dogs, but
it's the 16th most exciting day of your life.
But I have a lot of pets, so this was a very exciting day going public because I had worked really hard to build a superb company, Martha Stewart Living Omnimedia, and it was kind of a cutting edge company, and this was a company that actually took into consideration the internet, the television, the printed word, the media, as well as merchandising. So it was really, truly Omnimedia, and we still are. We're still Omnimedia. I love the idea of being Omnimedia. And we took ourselves away from publishing the magazine with Time Inc. We started publishing on our own. And that day, we went public at a share of, I think it was $18 a share, which went up to about $32. I was a multi-billionaire at that day. It was so
a good day.
And I drove money.
I drove up Madison Avenue after the long day, and I said, God, I can buy pretty much anything.
Did you?
No, I was so stupid. I should have spent it all then because everything was much cheaper then than it is now.
If you could go back to that day, what would you have bought?
Well, I should have bought, coulda, shoulda, woulda, coulda. That's a whole chapter in my autobiography, which I am penning right now.
Ooh. Oh, so is
and,
Katie.
You are making one too.
I am.
Good.
I'm
gonna, I'm not going to tell you anything else then, because you'll copy me. Forget
right back
it. No
at
more.
You, sister.
No, but the shoulda, woulda, coulda is a. I'm sure it's a big chapter in your life too, and it's one of those things that happens to everybody. I mean, I remember every single antique that I didn't buy at every single auction I went to from the time I was married in 1961. Can you imagine?
That seemed too expensive at the time.
No, it just seemed, oh, I can't afford it, or maybe it won't fit. And I should have bought everything. I should have been the biggest consumer. But I am a very frugal person. And
me
I still
too.
Am.
We have that in common.
Are you still?
Oh, my God, still.
I know. And my daughter.
Katie's more frugal than you are.
And my daughter, Alexis.
Thank you, Brian.
She points out all the time, why don't you have your own airplane, Mom? Why don't you have your own yacht in the river? And, you know, she knows I could have had pretty much anything.
You've done pretty well in the real estate department,
and I
should
probably
say.
Probably still do some of those things, but I'm not an extravagant liver. I live simply, personally. Although I do have, you know, I live on a farm of 150 acres.
I was going to say, you have some pretty nice houses, Martha.
I know, but it's simple.
Yeah. I don't know. I looked at your blog the last few days preparing for this interview, and I thought, who lives like this? Maybe the Queen of England.
No.
I think the Queen of England and Martha. No, it's unbelievable.
I don't have a butler.
I'm not faulting you.
I don't have a butler. The Queen has many
You have a lot of
butlers.
Staff. Anyway.
Well, I think the thing about Martha is that, you know, I've always thought that you have made elegance accessible. I think you predated sort of this whole notion of nesting and of making beautiful things and making a house a home and all that. What made you realize that there was an appetite for that in this country?
Well, I was brought up by a mother who really took the art of homemaking to the next level. She made everything. She sewed our clothes. She canned the tomatoes. She made a delicious meal three times a day for eight people. My mom was a very good example to me of wanting to elevate a simple life into a good, really good life, healthy life. And we were simple. I mean, I lived in a three-bedroom house on Elm Place in Nutley,
New Jersey,
which I go back to see sometimes.
Yeah.
The people almost had a heart attack when I knocked on the door the last time.
And did you bring them some cookies at least?
No, I just went to say, I said, I used to live here. They said, we know you used to live here. Yeah. And and could I please see my old bedroom, which I shared with my sister Kathy. And I would put Kathy on the right-hand side of the bed, which had the nightlight where I could read. I would make her go to sleep on that side to warm the bed, because we kept the house pretty cold, you know, saving fuel, all that stuff. And so then I would drag her to her side of the bed.
Martha was in charge even then.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she was six years younger. She has not forgiven me, believe me.
And I think a lot of people imagine you're like this major WASP. And the
truth
is,
I'm a daughter of two Polish American people. They were born here, but my grandparents, all four grandparents, were born in Poland, and they came to the United States on ships. And, you know, I could see the island where they landed, right here in New York Harbor, and they signed in, and two went to Buffalo, New York. My grandfather was a trained, and my grandfather Roskowski, my mother's father, was a trained ironmonger, decorative ironwork. And my father's family all moved to Jersey City.
I think about you because I know how close you were to your mom.
Oh, yes. Big Martha.
Unbelievably close. Yeah.
Did she ever come on the Today Show with me?
You know, I don't know. I feel like
I
she might
up.
Have, but I feel like I've met her definitely. Yeah. And I know you always spoke of her, and
was a really great mother. And one of those mothers who had six kids, and every child was equal. No matter what the bad things we did, we were all equal.
Sounds like my parents.
And that was until the day she died. We were all equal. We were all around her bed when she died. And she died at 94, and almost 94 years old. So she had a great life, never sick. She just finally, you know, decided it was time.
How many years ago was that?
That was about, I don't remember things like years, which is a good thing.
Yeah.
Do you remember things like years?
Well, I remember.
Do you remember
my mom
dates?
Died. I do.
Oh, you
my
do?
Mom died 3 years ago on
she
Labor Day.
She remembers everything. It's my
and so
I remember everything, but not dates.
I think about my mom so much, and I miss her so much. So I wondered if you felt the same way.
Oh, I miss my mother a lot, and I wonder, you know, what would mother think about this or that?
I'm
making a delicious meal, she would come over on Sundays, pretty much every Sunday from Weston, Connecticut, where she lived with my sister, Laura. She would drive herself. And then when she got past 90, I used to send somebody to pick her up. And she would come to my house and eat the healthiest, delicious lunch. She had a great appetite. She'd take a walk with me. Then she'd have a massage. I always got my masseur over for mom. Uh-huh. And we'd go to a movie, and she'd have a fabulous day. But she was what I really loved about her was that egalitarian attitude towards all of her children.
And, so even though her daughter was rich and famous, the other five kids were just as important and just as successful in her eyes.
Yeah.
So it occurred to me as we were preparing for this that, you know, you were a model early in your career. You were a stockbroker for several years. And you didn't really become, quote, Martha Stewart until you were in your 40s.
Oh, yeah. I was a late bloomer.
Which is like Julia Child. Actually, that's who it reminded me of.
Yeah, I was a late bloomer. And my gynecologist... even called
Wait
me.
A
we
second.
Went there.
He even called me a late bloomer. He said,
"Oh, in what context?"
No, just said that I was a late bloomer in terms of my business life. And isn't that funny that your doctor would call you a late bloomer? I thought it was great. It's like my gardener calling me a late bloomer.
First book came out,
Martha didn't really answer the earlier question though, which is, how did you know that this was a really potentially huge market for what you were selling?
Well, after being a stockbroker and working with people's money, I then retired to Westport, and I was sort of looking around for what
you were
to
doing
do.
A catering business.
Well, then
right?
I started a catering business with a friend called Norma Collier, and she was a famous model at the time, and she wanted to have a business too. So we started this catering business, dealing with people's appetites other than not their pocketbooks really, but the same thing. And they were very similar. I mean, people could be real nasty or real nice, money or appetite. And then Norma had to retire early because it was way too hard, the work. And I liked the physical labor. I liked the building a restaurant every night and then breaking it down and cleaning the cars. I mean, believe me, I'm a glutton for punishment.
You're a worker bee.
I am. I am a worker bee. I was just brought up like that. But I realized that the art of homemaking really and truly had not been celebrated in an appropriate way. And I thought of my mother all the time. Here's this fabulous woman who was also a very hard worker, but she hadn't been celebrated as a homemaker. And to be able to raise the kids, they were making, when my mother wasn't teaching, my father was working, they were living on a salary of about $11,000 a year. And this is a long time ago, but still, that's very little money to manage. That's why the garden was
so
big.
Six
kids. Yeah. That's why the garden was so big. That's why the clothing was made by hand. The sewing machine was always busy. Mom didn't get very many hours of sleep. You know, the whole thing. And we were not poor. We did not consider ourselves poor in any way.
So when did you realize that this thing you were doing, that homemaking and cooking and sewing and gardening, could become a business empire?
Well, I started writing books in 1982, and I'm sure you have my entertaining book, Katie.
I do.
Because I probably gave it to you.
And I actually still remember the pretty picture of you on the cover. Your hair was long, and I think it was maybe in a half updo or something.
And I had a white dress on.
Yes, and I remember your basket weave frosting.
Cake.
Yeah. Wasn't that in there?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Well,
I think I read that before I got married.
I started to write books because I started to realize that my friends were just like me. We all needed some encouragement to entertain better. We needed better recipes that could be done that weren't too complicated. And there were no, at that time, 1982, very few illustrated cookbooks. And I consider myself...
That sounds crazy.
Yeah, I know. But I considered myself kind of a really good cook at the time. And so I wrote this book, Entertaining. And my publisher, I remember saying, if you sell 10,000 copies, you should be happy. I said, I know 25,000 people who will buy this book. Because I had been catering for a while, and I had all Sotheby's clients. I had the museums in New York hired me for my services. I did parties at the Metropolitan Museum of Art.
How many copies did it sell?
Oh, it's way, way over a million copies. So I don't know the latest. I should know the exact number, but
you don't wake up in the morning and say, "Let's look and see how many copies."
I'm sure it's way over a million.
Because, by the way, that was for the first of what, over 100 cookbooks?
Well, we're up to 90 now.
Wow.
And we just published here. This is their.
I know. That's you've got a new one called Slow Cooker.
That's our 89th. And then the Newlywed Cookbook's coming out very shortly. And that will be our 90th. And then Martha's Flowers comes out in February.
Oh, I'm excited about that. Yeah. So does that teach you how to arrange flowers?
How to grow and arrange. It's growing, enjoying, and arranging flowers.
I love flowers. What's your favorite flower?
I like fragrant flowers. I like lilacs.
Oh, I love lilacs.
I like tulips. I like roses.
Don't you like peonies?
I love peonies.
You know, I love peonies, but I feel like they've become everybody's favorite flowers, so that makes me not like them
as
much. No,
but don't feel like that.
Now you know what I'm into, Martha? Well, obviously hydrangeas. I don't know. My hydrangeas were on steroids.
I know.
They needed a bikini wax this year.
This was the best year for hydrangeas, right?
Oh, my God.
Like apple
it
trees.
It was crazy. Oh, but so I'm really incredible. Into dahlias right now.
Oh, dahlias are fabulous.
They're so pretty. And, they're so gigantic.
I like dahlias and zinnias. I think they're together pretty.
Yeah, they're pretty. Yeah.
Oh, Brian.
Anyway, I know. Yes, every now and then I can surprise you. Can I ask you, though, you're so incredibly productive, all these books and TV shows and magazines, and I read you only need 4 to 5 hours of sleep per night. Can you walk us through a typical Martha day? I mean, what did you do today, for example?
No, today's like New York, so that's not so interesting. Yesterday was a good day.
Okay.
Okay, so yesterday I don't have live-in help, but I do require that my housekeeper or keepers, sometimes I have two, come in at 7. So I can't be in bed if my housekeeper comes. I just don't do that. So I'm up before they're up, and I take the covers off the bird cages, and I have red factor canaries in my house. They're beautiful, and they're singing. And then I have 3 cats and 5 dogs.
Is this in Bedford?
Yeah, Bedford, and where I live most of the time. I commute to New York.
I read somewhere you have 4 drivers.
Well, yeah, but not all at the same time.
No, I know.
But my days are so long, and they can only work 40 hours a week, and they can't be tired. So that's why.
All right.
But it's
Brian's just jealous.
But I'm totally jealous. All right. So we've taken care of the birds. What else?
So then I make breakfast for everybody. So I make eggs. The cappuccinos for everybody.
Because the eggs come from your chickens, right?
Yes.
Yes, you have many chickens.
Oh, no, we had salmon for breakfast. Oh. Because a friend had sent me 2 beautiful big salmons, line-caught salmons from Alaska last week, and I had to eat them, so I poached salmon. I'm doing a little blog on that, on how to poach a salmon. And it's some pretty pictures. And so I photographed the blog, and
Did you make like a remoulade with the salmon?
No. We just eat it with lemon juice. It's very tasty.
Healthy.
Yogurt, cucumber, sauce,
Nothing for breakfast. This is breakfast.
Oh, sorry.
And then for lunch, my green juice. We have green juice every morning. Everybody drinks green juice because it's like power.
So what do you put in your green
juice? So it's spinach, celery, parsley, mint, maybe a piece of fruit of some sort, like a pear. A green pear is good. A piece of melon or a piece of papaya or a mango, whatever. It's very good juice. Everybody
sounds
wants
delicious,
the juice.
Sounds delicious, actually.
Okay, so
we drink that.
Yeah.
Then I went on a horseback ride. And that was at 10 o'clock. I was ready for the horseback ride after doing, you know, getting, make sure everybody's doing stuff.
And you have lots of horses.
And I have 6 horses. But Bedford has a series of bridle trails, about 300 miles.
Wow.
So you can get lost. You can have a good time.
Doesn't Ralph Lauren live up there, too?
Yeah, he lives next door to me.
Oh, were you like, hey, Ralph. Hey,
yeah.
Martha.
Hi, Ralph.
As you're riding by
I'm the farmette to Ralph's estate. I'm the farmette. Modest farm next to Ralph.
Yeah, with the six horses.
No, we have a very nice neighborhood. And then, I should have told you. Then I'll tell you about Friday night afterward. And then I came back from the horseback ride. I made the lunch. So I sauteed some onions from the garden, fresh onions, and some red and yellow peppers. And I made a frittata. A delicious frittata studded with little dots of cream cheese, which I like in a frittata. I don't know why, but I just like it. And we had little cheese puffs that were left over from Friday night's supper, and a salad of dark red and green lettuce. Then we made 50 gallons of apple cider. Oh, would you bring some of that apple cider over here? 50
yeah.
gallons of this.
Wow.
And you know how hard it is to crush the apples?
It's delicious. I went apple picking.
I'll just take one sip.
Take a sip. It's so good.
Oh, that's really good.
What kind of apples did you use?
Who knows? On my property, we must have 50 varieties of apples.
That is really good.
That's
wonderful.
So delicious.
It's the best apple cider I've ever had.
No, we compare it to other
it's
ciders.
It's amazing.
I think it's really
what
good.
What makes it so good?
Just the variety of apples, I think. So we did that. And while they were doing that, I shucked and scraped the corn off about maybe 60 ears of corn. And I sauteed all the kernels in a little bit of butter with some water. And then I froze 10 quarts of corn kernels.
Wow.
And then I made a great pot there's so many tomatoes. I made a great pot of tomato soup, just tomatoes and onions, threw them all in this giant pot and cooked and cooked and cooked until
and then
I put it through the food mill.
Oh, no, through the food mill.
Yeah, so you get all the seeds and skins
yeah,
out.
Yeah,
I think we made 8 quarts of tomato soup.
This is your relaxing Sunday. This is Netflix and chill.
My friend Memory called and said, you have to go see this garden. It's on the Open Days in Greenwich. Open Days is the Garden Conservancy, mm-hmm. Which is a very fantastic organization I belong to. And people who belong open their gardens to other gardeners. So I went to see Mr. Landman's garden in Greenwich, which is incredible. 15-acre garden made me sick because if I feel
you
jealous.
You mean you were happy for him?
No, when I get jealous, the only time I'm ever jealous is, it's not envy, it's just jealous. Anyway, his garden is so beautiful. Then I went to see my friend Memory, who was lying in bed because she has a cut on her leg. Who knows? And then I left there. I got in a bad mood because she was in bed. And then I went home and we searched for my missing peacocks. We're always missing 2 peacocks. They were out eating with the, this is a busy day.
It is a busy day. It sounds fun though.
Yeah, it is fun. The peacocks are hanging out with the wild turkeys now. There's a gang of 5 wild male turkeys and my 2 male peacocks that I allow out of their enclosure. They have kind of befriended the wild turkeys. I have pictures.
Is there any nookie going on between
no,
the peacocks?
No, the males.
Peacocks
oh,
males.
Sorry. No, sorry.
Well, they could be gay peacocks.
A band of boys. And see, we could talk forever. I mean, you don't know. These are so silly. I hope this is not boring to
you. No, it's not boring. It's actually
no,
fun. But clearly,
cover.
you love.
I went to
being
get
a productive.
Massage. I went
you
to get
massage.
The Chinese reflexology in Mount
Kisco. I'm glad
Kisco.
You did something where you weren't
I did
being productive.
That. Then I went home and I did a little bit more cooking, but I had a column due this morning, so I had to work on my column on the restoration of furniture. So I had to write that. And that was my day. See, that's a Sunday.
It's time to take a quick break, but when we return, we're going to talk to Martha about those 5 months she spent in the slammer. It's something she has rarely talked about. And we're going to get the scoop on her time spent working with Donald Trump. That's right after this. These days, if we want to know something, we ask Alexa or Siri. But we don't always think about just how much AI is shaped by existing information and the limitations of the people who build it. On this week's episode of the Lean In podcast, Tilted, they talk to experts from MIT and Cornell to understand how AI leads to unfair decision-making and contributes to bias and what we can do about it. You won't want to miss it. Tilted features intimate conversations with some of the world's most powerful women in Hollywood and politics, sports, and business. It's hosted by Lean In co-founder and president Rachel Thomas, and every week they explore the gender bias that lurks in unexpected places and the impact it has on our everyday lives. Listen and subscribe to Tilted from Lean In on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And now back to our conversation with the one and only Martha Stewart.
After your release from prison, you did Martha Stewart, The Apprentice, The Apprentice, Martha Stewart.
Yeah, in this office. It was right here in this office.
We built
their bedrooms here, their kitchens. The whole thing was the most monstrous production you have ever seen.
And Donald Trump was the executive producer of it.
Well, yes, one with Mark Burnett. And Mark Burnett promised me when I agreed to do it that I would fire Donald at the end of my show. That Donald...
You were going to replace him?
Yes. And Donald did not want to be replaced by the time.
And of course, had that happened, he might not have been president.
I know. He maligned my show so badly.
Yeah, he was nasty, wasn't he?
Well, no. Who knows why? He wanted to stay on TV. He drank the Kool-Aid. And he loved it so much. My show did really well in Europe, and it did really well in Japan. But the ratings in America were not as good as Donald's ratings. But I wasn't as outrageous as Donald either. I think people like outrage, and as you know, after this whole year, we remained on a semi-cordial relationship.
And what did you learn about him from working with him?
He had very little to do with my show.
What did you learn about him from what he said about you around the show?
I was not happy, and my daughter. He said nasty things about my daughter, and she was on the radio at the time. She was on The Apprentice for a little bit. And did not like that. I mean, none of us did. And it was not nice. I would never say anything untoward about his children. You don't talk about people's children, but he does.
How do you think he's doing as president?
Do we have to really get there? I'm not happy at the state of things at all.
You were a big Hillary Clinton supporter.
I was a supporter. And I saw her in East Hampton. She was walking on Lily Pond Lane the other day.
Really?
Yeah, and I was walking my dogs, and I saw the black vans first, and I thought, oh, God, who's coming? And it was Hillary.
Was she alone?
No, she was with a friend, Liz Robbins.
Oh.
And we talked for quite a while, standing there in the middle of the street, and she looked well, and she told me her book was just about to be released. It was right, I guess it was a week before her book came out. And so I haven't read it yet. But she has to speak out. She has to say what she said. And you know, it's too bad.
She's really damned if she does, damned if she doesn't.
Yes.
I mean, I've been, I guess not surprised, but it's still, I'm always taken aback at the vitriol and hatred that is directed at her. I think people still are not comfortable, not all people, but many people are still uncomfortable with the notion of a woman in power.
Very much so.
I'm sure you've dealt with that.
Oh, of course. But I'm strong enough to sort of brush it off. And when you're running for president, it's pretty hard just to brush it off, although I probably would have behaved a lot differently than Hillary did on those debate stages.
What would you have done?
Told him to get lost. I mean, he was calling her names, and she wasn't calling him names. Call him some names.
Really? I don't know. Her
decorum did not. She didn't. I don't think people have to be so decorous to ugly people.
What's the old line about you get into a mud pit with a pig, and the pig's going to win?
Let me ask you the one thing. Many questions we had, Martha, is, and I don't think you've talked about it that much, is, you know, I look at you and everything you've accomplished, and then you had this moment in your life when you were in prison. And I imagine in my mind's eye
Yale. I went to Yale for 5 months. I read a lot. I learned a lot.
And what was that like for you? I mean, was that sort of like...
It was horrifying. It was horrifying, and no one should have to go through that kind of indignity. Really, except for murderers and you know, there are a few other categories, but no one should have to go through that. It's a very, very awful thing.
Having said that, I mean, was it a growth experience in any way? I know that you reached out to a lot of the other women.
You can make lemons out of lemonade, and what hurts you makes you stronger. No, none of those adages fit at all. It's a horrible experience. Nothing is good about it. Nothing.
What was so horrible about it?
Oh, being taken away from your family, being maligned, being treated the way you were treated. It's horrible. Especially when one does not feel one deserves such a thing. I mean, I was not a bad person.
Well, I think a lot of people were under the misconception that you were convicted of insider trading. You were not.
I wasn't even accused of insider trading, but I don't want to get into that either. I mean, it's just like, and one thing I do not ever want is to be identified, or I don't want that to be the major thing of my life. It's just not fair. But it's not a good experience, and it doesn't make you stronger. I was a strong person to start with, and thank heavens I was. And I can still hold my head up high and know that I'm fine.
Did you get to know any of your fellow inmates, and what was that like?
Oh, I did.
I know you helped them with certain things, and
I've tried.
Did you become friendly with them?
No, I'm not really friendly. I wouldn't say that as much as I've tried to help certain of them. Lots and lots of odd stories and disturbing things that go on in a incarceration like that.
Even a minimum security facility.
You couldn't walk, minimum security, you still couldn't walk out the gate, mm-hmm. Or across the river. There's still guards and it's still nasty and it's still, but that's, America has so many people in prison. You go to Finland, and there's about, I think there's like 100 people in prison in Finland, or some tiny number. They don't believe in that kind of incarceration. And I don't think we should have the numbers of people in prison. And most of the women that were in this institution were there because of the New York state drug laws. And now we have legalized marijuana in 7 states, I think it is. That's incredible. And people who had a few ounces of marijuana on them and are in there for 20 years, it just doesn't make sense.
Do some of those people get to be released as a result? I know that there was a big movement with President Obama to change sort of minimum mandatories.
Not enough was done.
So on a happier note, you've had this friendship with Snoop Dogg that I think has surprised and delighted some of your fans, just surprised others of your fans.
People seem to really like our potluck dinner party.
Entendre there, right?
Yeah. No, of course there's a double entendre.
I was being sarcastic, yes. Martha.
That was my name. I came up with that name.
You did.
I did.
She's very
That's
good.
My name.
Uh-huh. How did you two get to know each other?
We had the green meal. We had all kinds of stuff. Funny names. Well, he was on my show a couple times, and he was always just a pleasant guest.
Yeah.
And fun. And made people, and the response was always good.
Did you get a contact high from the green room after he came?
Oh, not in New York. He didn't. He didn't partake in anything.
He was on my show once, and honestly, I opened the door, and it was like one of those cartoons where the smoke just billowed out.
I think that's probably why he doesn't come to New York very much. Because he's not free to just...
That's true. This was in California.
Yeah. Oh, no, California. Oh, and then we did the Justin Bieber roast together. And that was the...
Which is hilarious, yes, for anybody who hasn't seen it.
It was hilarious. And there I did get a contact high, sitting next to him for 4 hours on
Literally,
the stage.
Literally, you got a contact high?
Oh, you couldn't help it. I mean, he had these, he was smoking for 4 hours.
That's
right next
impressive.
To me. Oh, yeah.
And, are you having fun doing the show with him?
Yeah, it really is fun. And it's, I call it a melding of cultures. I mean, here's Compton and Nutley. Probably not so. Probably not so different way down under. I met his mother. He brought his mother to the show. She's a lovely lady, very intelligent, very well-spoken. He had other family members there. I mean, it's kind of an interesting situation. And then we have these great guests. And we cook, and he's a fun cook. He is his Uncle Rio, who is this jovial, very fancily dressed gentleman who wears very jazzy clothes, spats and gold suits and whatever, and hats. And anyway, Uncle Rio kind of creates all the recipes for Snoop. and my straight-laced team of Thomas Joseph and the rest of the kitchen here, they're all like
working in their vineyard vine.
But right, it's fun. I mean, it's fun. I think what's so great about you're always reinventing yourself. You're always
change is good. That's one of my mottos. Change is good. And when you're through changing, you're through in my book. So, and you've done that. You've changed so nicely and evolved. And
I've tried, you know.
But you do. You're prettier now than you were when I first met you, by the way.
Thank you, Martha.
And yes.
I think it's because I had such a fat face when I was younger, and aging makes you kind of hollow out a little bit, but I had enough excess that I don't look gaunt.
No, you do not look gaunt.
I just look normal.
Right, you look great. And so I think all of that is good, and it's been interesting to also challenge myself. I mean, it's hard to go on stage with Jamie Foxx and Puff Daddy or P. Diddy or whatever his name is now, and Usher and all those guys and Little Yachty, and it's extraordinary the talent that comes on our show. Really amazing talent.
Yeah, that's fun. And meanwhile, as a business person, I'm curious, as a hugely successful woman in business, what do you think are the most important lessons you've learned along the way? Because, I don't know, I'm at the point in my career that I want to mentor more young women. And so what would you tell them?
Well, it's all about having ideas, having energy to grow those ideas into something. And having the wherewithal, whether it be personal or borrowed or education, to build something of lasting value. And I think just my library of books is of lasting value. Many of the other things that I've done also, I think, will have a lasting value. Building a brand is interesting, but unless it's a really good brand and has a wide audience, what the heck? I'm not a Bill Gates. I didn't invent software. I wish I had, but in the meantime, I utilize what's available, and learning how to use what's new and different has made a big difference in my business.
What do you mean?
You know, when I started my business, the internet was a baby. But I had a computer. I learned how to use that computer. I learned how to write and use the internet to do research, to do all of the things. Now, social media is another challenge for all of us. How do we maneuver and negotiate social media to make a difference without wasting a tremendous amount of time doing so? So I'm open to new ideas I'm one of the early adopters of the computer, believe it or not. I mean, isn't that crazy? But I am. And 1982, I got my first computer. When did you get your computer? Were you born yet? 1982.
I was born. I was just born. When did I get my first computer? I think it was in the late 80s at some point.
I got mine in the early 90s. I think in the early or even late 80s when I was a reporter.
Broadcasting wasn't using computers.
No,
when
we were using electric typewriters.
In 1991, we were the first magazine to design on an Apple. And I wanted to make sure that we were doing it in the new and different way. It was no cutting and pasting on big tables. So it's making use of what's available, currently available, is very important to me.
My dad used to say that you really had to stay on top of this ever-changing world. And
yes.
I think now more than ever.
Oh, yes.
It's a good thing, as would say, Martha. By the way, do you remember when I gave you the Matrix Award?
I do.
So I, you know, I worked so hard on this poem, and I have to just repeat the first
the
couple
Award,
of verses.
The Matrix Award, by the way, is for women in
Women
New
in
York.
Communications, yes. And Martha was, of course, so deserving. I remembered I was terrified because the dais was full of very impressive women that year. Of course you, and then Whoopi Goldberg, and I think Amy Tan, and Ann Richards, and all these people. But Whoopi went before me, and I was like, oh, I'm screwed. Because she's so funny and relaxed, and I was a nervous wreck. But I had worked really hard on a poem for Martha, and it went like this. Martha, dear Martha, what should I do? These people have asked me to introduce you. I haven't eaten. I haven't slept. Talk about making a girl feel inept. Anything I can do, you can do better. Dipping a candle, knitting a sweater, a room needs repainting, you'll make it sing with Robin's Egg Blue because it's a good thing. And only a woman who's in your position makes a gingerbread house this air conditioned. Tarte tartin, marzipan, cocoa vantu, bruschetta pancetta is not all you can do. Your holiday meals are a feast for the eyes. Why can't you use Stovetop and Mrs. Smith's pies? Anyway, it went on and on
and
like that.
She did not read
without
this.
Reading. No. Yeah. Anyway. Katie, why do you know this by heart?
Well, you know what? I think
what else do you know by heart, Katie?
I worked so hard on this, and it was so much
fabulous.
Fun to do, and I was so honored to be asked to present it to you. So that's one of my favorite poems.
By the way.
My dad used to say, I write doggerel, not poetry. Oh,
by the way, before we go, we have a listener voicemail question. We have a listener who called in with a question for Martha.
Oh, okay.
Hi, I'm calling from St. Pete, Florida, where I'm reading Martha Stewart Living by the Light of a Lantern because I'm still without power. But I've always been curious about whether or not Martha Stewart has ever done something she shouldn't have done, like stood up on a chair instead of a ladder, or didn't wear the safety glasses she was supposed to. She's taught us all how to do things right, but I'm just wondering about where she's made some goofs that taught her a lesson. Be well. Bye-bye.
Oh, my gosh. That's a good one.
What's your biggest screw-up?
Oh, my biggest screw-up was riding under the branch of a tree on my giant horse and getting knocked off because I thought I could bend backwards under it. That was a stupid thing because then I broke my arm.
Ow.
Yeah.
But were there any other things where...
Well, no. When she says standing on a chair instead of a ladder, I would never do that because I have taught everyone, I mean, you know, as an employer of people, you have to teach good lessons. So I'm very strict about having a ladder available in most places so that if you have to reach a high shelf, you step on a ladder. In the garden, they must wear their earmuffs when they're using loud machinery. They have to have safety lessons for chainsaws because I know how to use chainsaws. I mean, I really do practice good, healthy living.
Well, or either that or you're a control freak.
No. I practice
safety
good
first. Safety
good
first.
Practices.
Well,
no, I'm not. I mean, I'm not a nudge about it, but I'm serious about it.
But you're so good at everything. It's
and
quite
I gave
annoying.
A big gift to the emergency room, both in Westport and in Mount Kisco,
just in case
they're always taken care of.
But what is the biggest? Have you ever screwed something up terribly? Please tell me you have. Like,
of
what is
course.
The biggest? Thing you messed up.
I screwed up my marriage by being a caterer.
Really?
Probably.
I think about
or
you,
not
Martha,
thinking that I was attractive enough or something like that.
I see you at some social events. Our paths have crossed on a number of occasions, and you never remarried.
I have not. I screwed that up.
Are you sorry about
I
that?
I could have married the next guy or the next guy, but I didn't. I'm not unhappy about that. And now when I see some of my friends with their husbands, I'm so happy that.
are they unhappy and that makes you happy that you're not unhappy, or do you just feel like, ugh, who needs it?
No, none of the above. When Mr. Wright comes along, I'll marry him.
Are you still open to
of
dating?
Course. I'm a young, vibrant woman.
You are, and you're beautiful. How does somebody do you go on Match.com or?
I did
like
that.
J-Date?
Remember, I did that. Oh, that's right.
You went on Match.com
for the Today Show. Can you imagine? The algorithm just doesn't fit me.
It doesn't.
No.
Maybe you could go to on Farmers.com.
Maybe
that might be a match made in heaven, Martha. They could help you with your garden.
My farm. I don't want them. I don't want them to help me with my farm.
She's not going to be hoeing on Farmers.com. Sorry, couldn't resist.
Oh, Brian.
She
All right, we have
so
to
funny.
Talk about your new cookbook
yes.
before we go
yes.
because it's your 89th. Is that
yep.
right, Martha?
Martha Stewart, slow cooker.
We laugh because in the intro you said you'd never really used a slow cooker before, but you knew that they were really popular.
Yes.
And they are. Now, isn't this what people used to call a crock pot?
Yeah, this is the evolution of a crock pot. And it is so good. The food is so delicious. And this book, we set out with no holds barred and no preconceptions, because it's not just dump a bunch of meat and vegetables in a pot and add some water and turn it on and go
like
to work.
Cream of mushroom soup?
No, no. It isn't any of that. So you can make savory, you can make sweet, you can make cinnamon buns, you can make apple crisp.
We made you an apple crisp
from Gianna, my
stir
apples.
Some of that. Our producer Gianna is standing next to
bring
the
bring over
to
three
the
plates. For some reason, there's only two with... of everything. I don't think, Brian,
No, it's okay. I'm not getting it.
You can share it with
fine.
Me.
No, I'll share with Katie. It. Yeah. It's fine.
Anyway, so did you have fun making this cookbook as usual?
So much fun. I mean,
I'm excited because
I have to walk a few miles a day back and forth from the kitchens here. This is a long block, 11th to 12th Avenue. But to eat all this food, here, give that to Katie.
Oh my God, here. It looks incredible. It's like an apple crisp.
And this is an apple with cranberry cream.
Because I just picked so many apples. I'm looking for something to do with my apples.
It smells incredible.
Here, Brian.
Well, you take a bite then.
Take a taste.
Okay. Okay, that is so good.
And it's the apples. See, fresh apples.
The apples are delicious.
Oh,
Brian
my God.
And I can
you guys
share.
Have some, too. There's a whole crock pot.
Oh, that's delicious. After did you put this, cranberries in it
yes,
also?
Yes, yeah, fresh cranberries. Sorry.
So
Katie, this is the best interview we've ever done.
I know. We went to Ina's.
Ina cooked for us, too.
Made us these really delicious scrambled eggs that were cooked so slowly with truffle butter and a brioche toast.
You
that
and
was
Ina go back
too.
A long way.
Oh, yeah. When I bought my house in East Hampton, Ina still had the Barefoot Contessa shop in town, and we became friends. And I started her TV show. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Did she tell you that?
She said that you were an important
She forgot
mentor.
That I started her television
no,
program.
No, she gave you great
Actually,
credit.
I think she did mention that, Martha.
Yep.
She said that you wrote the introduction to her first cookbook, and
I
you were
did.
Enormously helpful to her.
Yep.
So we have a lightning round. You
okay.
Do that?
Yeah. But I was going to ask Martha about what Ina said, how she couldn't understand if somebody who didn't cook, why they would watch her show. But Brian and I were saying we love to watch cooking shows because even if we're not cooking whatever's being made, you learn, and they're so relaxing.
Yeah.
There's something, they're kind of hypnotic in a way.
And then you go eat.
Yeah.
You get hungry. These apples are delicious.
They are delicious. This whole thing is super yummy. Mm-hmm. All right, while I eat, Brian, why don't you start the lightning round
okay.
with Martha?
You're making a simple dinner at home just for you. What are you cooking?
Well, because I have so many eggs, I will oftentimes make something out of the eggs. But I will also just bake a fresh potato that's just freshly dug. I love baked potatoes. And
what do you put on it?
Just butter and sour cream or creme fraiche. So good. And lots of chopped herbs. I will cook a whole head of cauliflower or broccoli. Because I love that too. I'm healthy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And what do you put on the cauliflower or broccoli?
Oh, just cook it in salted water, heavily salted water, and maybe a dab of butter.
Are there any recipes you hate making?
Or
anything you hate cooking?
No, I won't do it. Why bother?
Any food you hate?
Brains.
Sweetbreads, right?
I won't eat brains. I don't.
Is that wait? Sweetbreads are intestines,
right? No, they're thymus glands or something.
I don't know. They're nasty. That's all I have to say. That and shad roe, which my dad used to love.
Oh, I love shad roe.
That's so nasty.
It's caviar.
I know, but the eggs are so big, and it's in this membrane, and it makes me want to vomit.
There's millions of little eggs inside the sacks. You're eating the sack of eggs.
Yum.
Shad roe.
Okay.
What's your biggest strength and your biggest weakness?
I think my biggest strength is my curiosity, and probably my biggest weakness is also my curiosity.
Why? Because you want to do too many things?
Yeah, probably.
Do you think marijuana should be legal?
I think so. I think so. But it should be controlled by parents. Because I just think that, there's too much in Denver. I'm understanding that school children are partaking too much and it's hurting their studies. I don't like anything that interferes with growing up in a healthy, vibrant environment.
I agree. I feel like you don't. Why do you? I mean, I understand mood altering drugs, but you know, because
what does a child need that for?
I don't understand having sort of this artificial.
Why worry about all the prescription drugs that kids are getting in school as well?
Like Ritalin and
Adderall and all of that. Anyway, we have a listener question that's very quick.
This is the longest podcast I ever did.
My message is for Martha Stewart. What is the best way to cook pork chops? I want to know. Thank you, Sharon, Garland, Texas.
Well, I think pork chops should be, you can bread them if you want, but I just dredge them in a salty, peppery flour, and then I just cook them lightly in a little olive oil and a little bit of butter until they are pretty much done, and then I squeeze fresh oranges over them and let the juices sort of caramelize. They're the best.
Because it's hard to make a juicy pork chop.
Yeah, but that's the best way to cook
pork chops. Something my mom was never able to do, I'll tell you that.
Don't broil them.
Yeah.
Because they get dried out.
What's your favorite thing to do with your grandkids?
Oh, explore. I mean, these kids are such explorers. So
they're how old now, Martha?
5 and 6, but they are great travelers. And we went to the Galapagos already. We've gone to Botswana. We go to Maine. They're climbing rock walls now. They hike.
Are they boys?
A girl and a boy.
A girl and a boy.
And they're very, very fun to be with.
And how's your daughter?
Alexis is great. She's a very good mother. And these children are the result of close attention.
Now, we talked about reinventing, so as we bring this to a close, what would you like to do, Martha, that you haven't done yet? Like, would you like to be in Martha the Musical?
That's a good idea, actually.
You can do that. You actually can be Katie in the musical.
No, actually, that would be a really fun musical.
I have some businessy kind of things to still do.
Can you give us a little hint?
Well, I've been working on an organizer for the homemaker, and I'm going to build that.
Always fun to see what Martha does next. Martha,
and delicious, my God.
Yeah, thank you.
This
that
is
was
amazing.
Really yummy.
You have to eat if you're going to produce.
For sure.
Yes.
Well, that was very delicious. And your new cookbook is called Slow Cooker, and I'm excited to have one. And I guess I'm going to have to buy a slow cooker now. Thank you, Martha.
Thank you, Katie. Thank you, Brian. And I'm glad you came to my office.
Thank you for having us.
And thank you for making apple cider and apple crisp and the cappuccino. A big Thanksgiving thank you to Gianna Palmer and Emily Bina, who produced the original version of this interview with Martha.
Emma Morgenstern is our producer, Nora Ritchie is the associate producer, and Jared O'Connell is our audio engineer.
Now, I don't have quite the staff that Martha has, but I do have a lot of great people I work with, including Beth DeMoz, my tireless assistant, and Julia Lewis, who helps me make my social media much more entertaining.
Jared Arnold composed our theme music. I'm on Twitter at GoldsmithB. And Katie is everywhere, everywhere on the social media stratosphere as Katie Couric.
If you have questions or comments for us, please call and leave us a voicemail. The number is 929-224-4637. We'll be back next week with a very exciting episode. Hugh Jackman, come to mama. Matt Bye and Jay Carson, two of my other favorite people. They'll all be talking about their new movie. Did that sound sincere?
Yeah,
the front
very
runner.
Sincere.
I do really like Matt and Jay. I'm not kidding. All kidding aside, I think they're both great and super smart. But they're all going to be here to talk about this new movie called The Front Runner. And Brian, as you know, this in many ways illustrates the moment when the media decided that it was fair game to talk about the personal lives of presidential candidates. And this candidate, of course, was Senator Gary Hart back in 1987. We hope you listen. We really enjoy talking to the three of them.
Yeah, Katie, they were great. So we'll talk to you all next time and hope you have a great Thanksgiving.
Stitcher.
What else is going on, Bri? Do a little Words with Friends, get me warmed up.
Hello, Deadbeats. It's Gabby. Gabby Dunn, host of Bad With Money. I had the Bad With Money book come out in January. I'm super stoked for season 4. This season, we're going back to our roots, and I'm having long conversations with amazing people and getting the big picture about money and the economy. Do you like intersectional, queer, social justice-based money podcasts? This is the only one, so get into it.
Did you earn it? Do you deserve to be like a billionaire when somebody who's working as a janitor or working in Walmart or a teacher who may be working just as many hours as you, maybe just as smart as you, like, does that make it okay that you have so much?
I get paid once a month, so my checking account's huge. It's like a tidal wave comes in, and then on the second, it's empty again.
Oh my God, you're speaking my language. Bad With Money is back now for season 4. Listen in Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.